Blog Talk Radio.
My friends, welcome back to the CNC Football Factory, the CNC Jets Factor, the CNC, you name it, whatever you want to call it. We are back. We are talking football. We are talking, I would say, Jets football, but let's be frank, there's not a whole lot to talk about on that front. This is your host, Carlos Sardinius. I'm flying solo, a.k.a. I'm the owner of a lonely heart today. I will be your host. CJ is in an undisclosed cabin somewhere in the backwoods of Georgia enjoying his family and some vacation time. We all pray that he comes back in one piece and is not rendered asunder by the backwoods hill folk that live in Georgia. But seriously, he's enjoying some vacation time, so it's just going to be me. And today we're going to be talking primarily about the second part of our breakdown of the AFC East. We're going to be talking about the Miami Dolphins. Last week we talked about the Buffalo Bills. I would say I'm going to recap you on Jets news, but, I mean, guys, this is the dead part of the season. If there's anyone even listening to me right now, you know there is not much to talk about in Jets land. Sheldon Richardson was suspended last week. We talked about it. The end. Now we wait for training camp in a couple weeks. For now, we recap. That's what we do. So we're going to be talking about the Miami Dolphins. It's an interesting team to me because they made a lot of moves. They made a lot of moves. But did they get better? The question. Did they actually get better? Or did they just make a bunch of moves? That's, to me, obviously you have the signing of an Ndamukong Suh. It's the biggest move they made in the offseason. They signed him for $1 billion. I mean, it sounds like. No. It was a huge contract. He definitely is going to bolster that defensive line. So don't get me wrong. Definitely a big addition, something that the rest of the offensive lines and the AFC East have to be wary about. Is Ndamukong Suh. You're going to have to stick two guys on him. And, you know, everyone, you know, from the Patriots, the Jets, the Bills, have to worry about this guy. He's a beast, but there's a reason that Detroit let him walk, because he was asking for an ungodly amount of money. And when you invest that much into one position, you have to sacrifice in other areas. So, there was a number of departures as well that came along with the fact that they had to sign Ndamukong Suh. But Suh was not the only addition in the offseason through free agency. Bryce McCain, cornerback. He was signed. He was from Pittsburgh last year. Jordan Cameron comes in and replaces Charles Clay. Now, if you ask me, I'd rather kept Clay. That's just me. He's more reliable. He doesn't have the concussion issues. Jordan Cameron played a total of like 1.5 games last year. Seems to be hurt, but he does have a ton of talent. That's one of those, again, why I say, did they actually get better, the Miami Dolphins, or did they just make a bunch of moves? I don't know. They bring in Kenny Stills from the New Orleans Saints via trade, and they traded away Mike Wallace. Kenny Stills, very promising young player. Obviously, his contract's very team-friendly. Mike Wallace's was not a team-friendly contract. Mike Wallace really had not performed to his contract his entire time in Miami. Some people blame Tannehill for that. Some people blame Wallace for that. I think they got a slightly more promising young player. I think what Kenny Stills brings that Mike Wallace doesn't is that Kenny Stills can run the route tree. Mike Wallace is, hey, take off, go fast, and catch the ball. And Tannehill was horrible at the deep ball, so it was not a good connection at all. I think Kenny Stills has some promise to him. He'll be starting opposite Jarvis Landry, most likely. But again, he's still a young kid, so he has to prove himself. He had a pretty good year last year with Drew Brees dominating the ball, but Tannehill's no Drew Brees. And then finally, the Dolphins brought in J.D. Walton, center from the New York Giants, as a little bit of depth. They have some returning players, Jason Fox, DJ Francis, defensive tackle, Jordan Kovacs, backup safety. Kelvin Shepard's coming back. Michael Thomas is another safety coming back. They bring back like Michael James, Matt Moore, Louis Delmas, who actually had a couple pretty good decent years with the Detroit Lions, and Derek Shelby, defensive end. So, who left? A lot of people left. Brandon Gibson, gone. Brian Hartline, gone. Cortland Finnegan, gone. Nate Garner, gone. Philip Wheeler, gone. Shelly Smith, gone. Randy Starks, Danelle Ellerbe, Mike Wallace, traded away. Jared Odrick, I should say. Jimmy Wilson, and of course, I think a key, and I know he was hurt a little bit last year, but a key player in Charles Clay also departs. And what Charles Clay brought was he had good hands. He was a reliable target that Tannehill could look for when needed. He was pretty underappreciated. I actually think again, I don't know if they really got better by bringing in Jordan Cameron over Charles Clay. That's just my opinion. I could be dead wrong about that. So the Dolphins, they have Mike Tannenbaum kind of running the show now. And those of you that are Jets fans know, Mike has a bit of a reputation. He likes to spend. He, at least at his time with the Jets, he spent and spent and spent. But, you know, some of the moves he made outside of getting Sue, which, of course, is a lot of money, some of the moves he made was to clear cap space, which we really didn't see up in New York very much at all. So maybe there's a little bit more to Tannenbaum than meets the eye. Trader Mike doing some things down there. The Dolphins are widely regarded as the top challenger to the New England Patriots in the AFC East. I don't know if I agree with that. I think they're a little closer to the pack than everyone likes to think. They're still basically a 500 team. I don't care. Look at what they did this offseason. Again, is it better or worse? I don't know. They're probably still around a 500 team. 8-8, 9-7, 7-9. There's some good pieces there. I like some of the younger players. They have Jarvis Landry last year who kind of came on. Lamar Miller is an underrated running back. But another big question with the Dolphins is, what's their head coaching situation? I could make the argument that the Miami Dolphins have the worst head coach in the AFC East. Joe Philbin, many think, might be on the way out. He might be on the way out if this year doesn't produce a playoff berth for the Miami Dolphins. And I can't blame him. Joe Philbin, widely regarded as at best a mediocre head coach, really hasn't been looking all that great. And, you know, there's a ton of talent on the team. They just can't seem to get it there. So let's talk a little bit about Miami Dolphins draft, and we'll talk who they picked up in the draft. Miami, they used their first selection on Devontae Parker, Louisville wide receiver. He ended up actually needing surgery. It should be minor. He'll be back for, I would assume, preseason. In the second round, they started off with the 15th pick, number 47 overall, but they traded it to Philly. And they got back the 20th pick in that round, and the along with a couple fifth-rounders. And then the Dolphins used the 52nd pick to select Jordan Phillips out of Oklahoma, defensive tackle. They didn't have a pick in the third round. They picked Jamil Douglas, a guard out of Arizona State, in the fourth. The Dolphins picked cornerback Bobby McCain, in the fifth round. Again, a guy I kind of targeted, I'm surprised that he fell as much as he did, in J.E., out of Boise State, a running back. A lot of people had him pegged as one of the top 6-7 running backs. He fell all the way to the fifth round with concern over a knee injury that happened, I want to say, 2 or 3 years ago. Apparently it was enough to scare off some teams. The Dolphins got a nice little pick there to back up Lamar Miller. Also in the fifth round, they picked Cedric Thompson, and then Tony Lippett from Michigan State. They didn't have a sixth-round pick. They didn't have a seventh-round pick. So that is pretty much the draft for the Miami Dolphins. So, with that being said, the question is, how does the Miami Dolphins, as a team, stack up against the New York Jets in the AFC East? Well, let's look at it positionally. I would say from a quarterback perspective, the Dolphins have the edge. Tannehill, he may have his issues, but he came on strong last year. He's proven that he could lead the team. He came on after being called out by Philbin after a little bit of a debacle over in the UK. Tannehill played pretty well. It's hard to say that the Jets have a better quarterback. I can't say that. So I give the edge to the Miami Dolphins in terms of the quarterback play. If we look at the wide receiver crew, again, we kind of talked about Stills and Parker and Landry. They have a pretty nice young little core. I kind of like the Jets players a little bit more, but they're more, with Marshall, with Decker, more seasoned, more veteran crew. You got Curley in the mix there. I like the Jets wide receivers a little bit more, although that may change in about 3 years. At running back, as much as I like Lamar Miller, I think he showed last year he could be an every down back. Joe Philbin showed that he's an idiot, as he refused to let Lamar Miller touch the ball more than 15, 16 times a game. Even when he was hot, he showed he could be durable, which was a question mark up until last year. They still capped his reps and put in the likes of a Daniel Williams and the others that nobody gives a damn about. For my money, I like the New York Jets running back crew a little bit more. And the reason why is because they're tougher. They're just bigger, stronger. That's what I think. I think they could ground it out. Lamar Miller, good player, proven he can be a third down back, but not exactly the kind of guy you're going to pound the ball with to ice a game. You got Chris Ivory on the Jets, couple of Powell on the Jets, you got Ridley, Zach Stacy. I like the crew that the Jets have assembled in the running back position, even though I may have griped about that in the past, compared to the Miami Dolphins. Offensive line. This is a pretty good question here with the offensive line. Because that was one thing the Dolphins have been trying to get going, for a while now. The Miami Dolphins with the whole debacle they had with the Jonathan Martin thing and then Richie Incognito, all that stuff a couple years ago. They've been trying to get this offensive line going. They have Brandon Albert, who they signed a couple years back, big-time money at left tackle. Tentatively, we have Jamil Douglas penciled in as the left guard. Mike Pouncey, who he may be a knucklehead, but he's a pretty talented center. At right tackle, you have Juwan James and then Billy Turner on the right side of the guard position. It's not a bad crew. Here's how I would compare them to the Jets. I think the Jets have higher-end talent at key positions, such as center. But I think overall, there's less weaknesses on the Miami's offensive line. And it's also worth noting that Tannehill helps that out by the fact that he can escape pressure. He wasn't as pressured as Geno Smith was, but he also got rid of the ball fairly quickly, so he helped his offensive line out. So I would say slight edge to the Dolphins there, and really just because I think they don't have as big of a weakness as the Jets do sitting at right guard. Billy Turner not setting the world on fire, of course, but still I think it's a little less of a question mark. But I think the Jets have a better center. Nick Mangold, all pro, all world. But again, overall as a crew, I think I like Dolphins' offensive line a little bit more. Now, here's where it's interesting, because the Dolphins actually have a heck of a defensive line here. They're able to assemble. You have Cameron Wake on the left edge, Ndamukong Suh right up the middle. It's a scary dude. Oliver Vernon, they had to lose a couple guys, but Olivier Vernon, Earl Mitchell, C.J. Mosley, up-and-coming guy, Derek Shelby, Anthony Johnson, pretty good crew. Sue is what this defensive line is centered around now, and a lot of teams have to account for it. That being said, and take the fact that Sheldon Richardson is suspended out of it, I still kind of like the Jets defensive line just a little bit more. I know, Sue, top-end talent. Everyone's got to count for him. I think the Jets have a little bit more depth in that defensive line. You know, you forget about guys like Legay Doosipple. One player I wanted to hit on, actually, while we're talking about New York Jets football, and I haven't really gotten to talk about it in the past, is Quinton Coples. What can he do this year? What could Quinton Coples do to improve? A lot of people are really, you know, that follow the team really think that Quinton Coples can improve under Todd Bowles. I am more in the wait-and-see category, because I haven't seen it yet. You know, the questions with Coples is what it's always been when he was drafted. Is the motor, is the effort there? He's going to be put in a more natural position for him to rush the quarterback and you know, not have to sit back and pretend like he's an offensive or an outside linebacker, which just wasn't a good fit. Again, another example. I know I harped on it last week. Rex Ryan, square peg, round hole. That's what he was doing with Quinton Coples. Well, we'll see. We'll see if he improves. But, you know, as far as depth, that's not a bad guy to have as your fourth-best defensive lineman at all, you know, behind Richardson. And I'd put Leonard Williams up there in the top three already, just from what we've seen in the practices and his talent, what we saw at USC, and, of course, Muhammad Wilkerson. So I like the Jets' defensive line a little bit more than the Dolphins, and I know there's probably some Dolphins fans saying, hey, our defensive line isn't that bad either. We got Ndamukong Suh, and you don't. And that's true. But I think overall the Jets' defensive line as a unit is a better unit. And we'll show that this season. The linebacking core, however, is a different story. Dolphins have Jelani Jenkins, Koamisi, which is a very underrated middle linebacker, great at stuffing the run. Again, we talked about Calvin Shepard, which was brought in. It's hard to really say here. I kind of call this a push. I don't see any major advantage that the Dolphins have at the linebacker position that the Jets don't. I know I focused on that as a weakness of theirs in the past, but I just don't see where the Dolphins linebacker, no one there scares me. Their strength is their defensive front. And then it actually gets a little bit worse as you keep going back. Let's talk about cornerbacks. Brent Grimes, very underrated guy, got brought in by the Dolphins last year. He was coming off an ACL. Was it last year or the year before? I don't know. Recently, coming off the ACL. Definitely showed his worth and is now starting out there. Very underrated guy that a lot of people forget about. Good cornerback there. Opposite him, Will Davis, also kind of underrated, but I'll take the Jets cornerbacks over that all day, every day. And then in the safety position, the Dolphins had Rashad Jones and Louis Delmas. I'll call it a push. I don't know what else to say. The Jets safeties have a lot to prove to me, but I'm not exactly wowed by the Dolphins safeties either. Ask a Detroit Lions fan about Louis Delmas and his coverage skills. Meh. All right at best. So, you know, that being said, again, we're coming back to the same conclusion. It's going to be a very difficult season to predict. Dolphins versus Jets. Dolphins, how do they stack up against the AFC East? Again, they're another one of these teams. They have some positives. They're widely regarded as the team to contend against New England. And I say baloney to that. I don't see why they're any more in the conversation than the Jets or the Bills are. They have some good players. They have some weaknesses, just like everyone else. I think everyone just jumps on, oh, Tannehill. Well, Tannehill, he's the guy that, you know, he's the next best quarterback in the division. And I agree to a certain extent that's true. He's proven more than Geno Smith at this point, and he's proven more than whatever abomination they have up in Buffalo at quarterback right now. But I still think the Jets are going to definitely push this team. I know last year it didn't seem like that until week 17. And let's just talk about that game. If you put any stock into what happened in week 17 when the Jets played the Dolphins in Miami, you're a fool. The Dolphins had their bags packed. That defense was asleep. Geno Smith was playing 11-on-7 for all intents and purposes. That's why he looked like Joe Montana. The Dolphins had checked out. That if you watched the game, you could see the Dolphins were not pursuing. They were going through the motions, and the Jets were really trying. And that's what happened, and how Geno Smith had like 5 million touchdowns and 500 yards or whatever it was against them. So don't put up a lot of stock into that. If you look at the game prior to that, you'll see that it did not go that great for us. It was close. We blew the game. This was the game where we got into the political pissing contest between Idzik and Rex Ryan. It was a disaster. Let's just not kid ourselves there. But take all that aside, it's an anomaly. I think that this year it's going to be a very close competition between these two teams. I could see the Dolphins finishing second. I could see them finishing third. I can't see them finishing fourth. I don't think they'll be worse than Buffalo. Again, I'm bagging on Buffalo, and they might be good. Any of these teams could finish second, first, or fourth. It's going to be a tough year for everyone involved. But I like, you know, we broke down the positions. I think what you need to worry about as a Jets fan is, what the heck are we going to do against Sue with our offensive line? Not that our offensive line is horrible, but there are question marks and there's holes. There's many holes that we have to worry about, especially at the guard position, right guard. And you know, you have to worry about that when you talk about defending a defensive line that was already pretty good. When you bring Sue on top of that, it's Cameron Wake's going to have a pretty good year. Excuse me, I had to take a drink of water because I've been talking for about 25 minutes straight now. So that is the Miami Dolphins. Quick shout out to my good friend, Frederick, runs Nasty Baggers out in Longwood, Florida. They do custom motorcycle parts and shift linkages and all kinds of, you know, apparel and stuff like that. I could forgive the fact that you're a Dolphins fan, Frederick, and if you're listening, it's cool with me, man. You're still a good guy. So anyway, that's a quick shout out to one of the few Dolphins fans I will acknowledge I actually know. What's up, Frederick? How you doing? Hopefully you're listening. So anyway, let's talk a little fantasy football. We're going to have a bit quicker of a show today than normal. Want to get back to my Sunday. And this is one, this is kind of the big one. We're talking the running back position. We're going to preview the running backs, fantasy football. This is really the big question of all, because if you're any kind of drafter, you're going to be considering the running backs as your top pick. You know, depending on your settings, you might be thinking a wide receiver. You know, you might even be thinking about Gronkowski just because of positional value. But, you know, for my money, I think you have to talk running back. This is where everyone drives themselves nuts. And you want to know where you're picking. And the big question is, who's number one? I mean, last year when you look at it, it was DeMarco Murray and Le'Veon Bell. Well, a couple things have changed since last year. For one, DeMarco Murray is not in Dallas anymore. He's in Philly. And with that being said, he's in Philly, and he's not going to be getting the workload that he got in Dallas. And he, as much as PFF may say that the Philly offensive line is just as good as Dallas's, if you have eyeballs, you know that's not entirely true. Again, there's plenty of statistics that prove this, that, or the other, but if you have eyeballs, you saw what Dallas's offensive line did to opposing teams, and then you saw what Philly's offensive line did to opposing teams. And statistically, or whatever garbage you want to talk about, maybe Philly's right up there, but it's not even close to the same thing. I mean, Dallas was mauling people. They mauled the Seahawks. They mauled everyone they ran into. And DeMarco, I could have ran for 1,000 yards behind that offensive line. Well, now DeMarco Murray's in a different situation. He's in Philly. He's going to be splitting reps. That's going to kill his value going from the situation he had to the situation he's in. So who's number one? I think most people are coming down to a combination of Le'Veon Bell, who, remember, has a suspension for 2 games, Jamal Charles, and Adrian Peterson. That's kind of the top three that's starting to form. It's kind of risky. I would, you know, honestly, I would say, especially if you're playing in a PPR format, even with the 2-game suspension, with all that being said, I think I'd still put my money on Le'Veon Bell. Now, if your standard, it's a little bit closer with Peterson. And I know Peterson has a year off. But, you know, look at the first couple games he played before he was suspended for whacking his kid with a stick or a tree or whatever he did. Kind of pedestrian, really. And he's not a spring chicken. I'm not saying don't draft AP. I'm just saying this is not AP circa 2011 anymore. For my money, I would actually say I would bite the bullet. Le'Veon Bell, first pick, followed by Jamal Charles. And the only reason why is because Jamal Charles always seems to get hurt at the worst time, and Andy Reid is one of the most frustrating coaches to have if you own a running back. I mean, there inexplicable times he would just pull Jamal Charles in key situations last year. Key situations from a fantasy football perspective. Yes. So, who are some other players I like? Here's one I want to talk about a little bit. Matt Forte. Matt Forte has been fantasy gold, especially if you play in PPR formats for the past couple years, playing under the Trustman offense. He's not under the Trustman offense anymore. So what's Matt Forte going to do? Well, he's going to run more, but he's going to catch less. And he's also probably going to be spelled a little bit, not touch the ball as often. The Trustman offense was centered around, you know, your key players and no one else but them touched the ball. Forte is probably going in the top five. I don't know if I would go there. One walk if you get a chance to get him. If you miss out on the top three, don't feel too bad. Eddie Lacy will be there at 4 or 5. You could go with Lacy. I know he had the concussion issues early on, but he proved his muster later on in the year. He was fine. You know, some players that are going lower than expected that I think that everyone needs to target. And you know, as much as fantasy football is a year-to-year thing, don't forget what happened last year. Okay, LeSean McCoy is going ahead of both C.J. Anderson and Jeremy Hill. And I understand LeSean McCoy is going to touch the ball a bunch, but he's running with a BS offensive line. I mean, they're nothing to write home about. And you saw what he did last year. He was going sideline to sideline. He was running east and west, not north and south. And great player, but can he continue what he did 2 years ago? I don't know. But for my money, in the situation that this particular player's in, he's going later in the first round still. C.J. Anderson. Any of you that owned C.J. Anderson last year, picked him up off the waiver wire, knows what gold he was. He won me a title last year by picking him up off the waiver wire. C.J. Anderson, I know, are you going to be worried about Monte Ball? Yeah, I guess. But what did he do last year? Nothing. C.J. Anderson came in, basically turned that team into a running team because Peyton Manning and his feeble arm couldn't carry the ball down the field more than 20 yards accurately without looking like a duck floating in the sky. C.J. Anderson, and then another guy, Jeremy Hill. What did he do to dissuade you? I know he's not going to be the pass catcher you'd like to see. They still have Bernard out there. But Jeremy Hill, all he did was bowl over teams in the second half of the season. Great player. He's going 12, 13, 14. Behind LeSean McCoy, behind DeMarco Murray, which we talked about. Yeah, Murray will get his touches. Murray will get his points. But, you know, you still have to worry about the health issues, and you still have to worry about the fact that he's going to have limited touches. C.J. Anderson and Jeremy Hill, unless something's changed this offseason that I don't know about, are still the bell cows for their respective teams. So I kind of like that duo. Yes, carrying it forward from last year. One guy that's going real high, kind of, I guess I understand it, Frank Gore. What the heck did Frank Gore do last year? Not a damn thing. So Frank Gore goes from San Francisco to Indianapolis. Fine, his value gets bumped up a little bit, but he's not top 15. I'm sorry, and he's going in the top 15 right now in mock drafts. I'm not investing in that. Any positional player in Indianapolis is going to be a crapshoot. Frank Gore is too old to carry the load by himself. He's going to be splitting it. He'll get some points, but to be in the top 15 and go over the likes of Lamar Miller or Mark Ingram, to me, is absolutely ludicrous. Let's talk a little bit about Mark Ingram. Player I like. You know, obviously, he has some things to contend with. He's not going to catch you a ton of passes, but New Orleans is going towards a more run-heavy offense. Mark Ingram showed that he could carry the load It took a few years, but he's showing a little bit of the promise that he had with his Heisman year in Alabama. And the Saints have already pretty much shown their hand and said, we're going to be running the ball. This is what we're going to do. And, you know, we're not going to have Drew Brees chucking it around 35, 40 times a game. We're going to be more balanced offense. Look for Mark Ingram to have a nice year. He's going outside the top 15. Not a bad guy to select if you miss out on the top guys as your number two. Heck, even your number one if you're really strong at other positions. Let's see. Let's talk a little bit about one guy in particular that to me is blowing my mind that he's going as low as he is. Outside of the top 20. Regularly, outside of the top 20, Latavius Murray is going outside of the top 20. To me, it's insane. He's going to be the running back for the Raiders. They're improving. He showed what he could do. I know he had the injury right after he blew up against the Chiefs, but there is not a situation that screams draft me more than Latavius Murray, especially where he's going. Watch out for him. He could pass, or he could catch the pass. He could run. He can be a bell cow, and there's unless you think Trent Richardson's really going to challenge him, he's a slam dunk number one running back that you could get for number two, number three value. Go get Latavius Murray if you can, and just remember this when you're winning your championship. Another guy stepping into a good situation, it looks like, with Frank Gore being gone, is Carlos Hyde. He showed that he could be he was a guy they went to in the end zone, the 49ers did last year. He should be a good value in the middle rounds for you. He'll be a starting running back, and he's not going as high as you would expect. So that's another guy I kind of look at and say, okay, not bad. I might look at you. Not a bad guy. Let's talk a little bit about the rookies before we wrap this whole thing up. The rookies coming in this year, we have T.J. Yeldon, Todd Gurley, and Melvin Gordon. Out of those, I think most people are settling on the situations for T.J. Yeldon and Melvin Gordon as the best bet for a running back rookie to come in and produce for you. Both are going around the 19 to 20, 21 range. If you ask a lot of fantasy experts that I trust, they're really big on Yeldon this year, and I can see why. If you look what Denard Robinson did last year, and he's a converted quarterback that became a running back for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and he was lights out until he got hurt. And with the improvement that the Jaguars have shown, and if Yeldon is going to be the bell cow, not a bad guy to have. The issue I have with Gordon, and it's not even necessarily anything that he's done, it's the situation he's in. He still has a lot of other running backs that are going to be behind him that are going to spell him. Danny Woodhead's going to be back. Brandon Oliver's still there. They're going to mix him in. I think Yeldon's going to have a little bit more of the workload than what Melvin Gordon's going to do. And then really the most talented running back that was drafted this year, Todd Gurley, is in a situation where they have a ton of great running backs there already. They still have to battle it out. So I wouldn't invest a ton, especially if you're drafting early in Todd Gurley. He may come out on top, but that's a big risk. You really want to wait on the whole preseason to shake out before you go ahead and pick Todd Gurley anywhere close to high. And then, of course, we have Tevin Coleman in the Falcons' backfield. The Falcons' backfield, if you could figure it out, I'll give you $100. I can't tell you what's going to happen. They've got a bunch of nice young players there, but who's going to win out? Who's going to get the touches? How are they going to be split? No idea. I don't want to bet my fantasy season on them figuring it out or me saying that I know how it'll go. Excuse me. You know, there's a lot of these murky situations out there when you talk about the running back position, fantasy football. A lot of teams are employing the running back guy by committee, where it's not even just splitting between two guys. I mean, you're splitting between three. You know, look at the Lions, for example. They drafted Ameer Abdul. They have Joik Bell. They still have Theo Reddick out there. Those three guys are going to combine to be one guy. So which one do you pick? It's tough. I don't know. It depends on your format. And you still have to see what shakes out in training camp and in the preseason. But, you know, so is San Francisco. And we were talking about Carlos Hyde earlier. Reggie Bush is there, too. He's going to catch some passes. the Eagles' backfield's a mess. Yeah, I know Murray's the clear number one, but Ryan Matthews is nothing to sneeze at. He's going to come in and spell him. And Darren Sproles is a factor, too. Anyone that owned Shady McCoy last year, me, I went big on Shady last year, and learned that Chip Kelly likes to screw with you. Chip Kelly's Satan. He is. He makes Mike Shanahan look like an angel. He likes to screw with you. He really does. And it's going to be frustration for Murray owners out there. Absolutely. Especially with Sproles out there catching passes, stealing points from you. It's going to be difficult. The Giants, forget it. I don't even know. I don't. You have Jennings, you have Andre Williams, not a bad backfield, and then you throw Shane Vereen on top of it. Who's coming out on top there? No idea. That's why I'm saying if you could find situations, heck, look at the Jets. This is a Jets podcast. The Jets backfield. You know Ivory's kind of going to be the number one, but you look what happened last year. You're guessing, is he going to have a good game? Is Chris Johnson going to be the one to score? Who's getting the goal line touches? And now we're bringing in Ridley and Zach Stacy. I don't know if Zach Stacy's going to stick, but it's kind of a mess. Cleveland's the same way. Cleveland had Isaiah Crowell. Now you're throwing in Duke Johnson, which a lot of Jets fans wanted to draft. There's a lot of teams with murky situations. So my suggestion to you is to find, and I know it's rare, but find and target running backs that at least appear to have the starting job kind of locked up to themselves. And what I mean by that, you know, we were talking about it earlier, but Adrian Peterson's the world. Obviously, not everyone's getting AP. But you want to look for a clear number one running back. Even Marshawn Lynch, I know he's old, but he still continues to produce. You want to have, if you're playing in most leagues, you want to have two starting running backs that you don't have to think about whether they're going to be the number one guy or not. To me, that matters more than the potential explosiveness. And that's why you're starting to see T.J. Yeldon climb draft boards. But it's also why it drives me absolutely nuts to think that Latavius Murray is going as low as he is. Good God. I mean, if you get him in the second, third round, take him and run because you have just stolen something. I'm telling you, he is going to do wonders this year. So, with that being said, are there some potential diamonds in the rough that we haven't talked about? Well, here's one. And this is the big question mark in Dallas. So, Dallas has a great offensive line. They've got a good quarterback, receivers, you name it. They lost DeMarco Murray. And what did they replace him with? Darren McFadden may very well be your starting running back for the Dallas Cowboys. And I know it's a risk. And you probably could get him on the cheap because most people are scared to death of the name Darren McFadden. But he may just be the starter. What's he got? A Joseph Randall and a Lance Dunbar? Maybe they beat him out, but watch that situation closely. I think Dallas will employ somewhat of a running back by committee, but I don't think they have the horses to do it as much as they think they do. And Darren McFadden might be a gem later on in the draft until he breaks his leg in the second game or something. You know how that goes, fantasy footballers. You know how that one goes. But worth a shot if you have a chance at him and you feel pretty certain in other situations, might be a nice little steal for you. Kyrie Robinson is another one I should say Pierre Thomas, not Kyrie. Pierre Thomas is out there, pass catching guy, but you got to watch out for CJ Spiller. So if you're playing points per reception, CJ Spiller is a nice little sleeper there. Peyton's already said he's going to be involved in the offense. You already have Graham gone. Drew Brees is going to be thrown to the running back. It's something they do. They got away from it when Darren Sproles left, and they're going to try to come back with it with C.J. Spiller. So watch for him to do some things. And then another guy that, as far as I could tell, until he gets hurt, that may bring you some value, that is Jonathan Stewart of the Panthers. The Panthers like to run. He's scary as heck. And he gets injured, don't get me wrong, but when he's healthy, one of the top running backs in the league and not a ton of competition behind him. And the Panthers, again, like to run with Cam Newton there, he helps your running game just by existing. So definitely another one to watch. Again, it's a minefield, friends. It's going to be one of the murkiest drafts you will be entering is this year, with all the running back by committees and all the question marks out there, and not a lot of them are going to be answered. My advice to you again, target guys that have a very good chance of being the number one guy, clear cut, 60 to 70% of the touches. That's who you want to target. That's what you want to look for, if you can find it. And finally, the last bit of advice, and one player I'm going to target heavy that a lot of people are not as high on as maybe I am, Justin Forsett. Justin Forsett is entering a situation where he has Mark Trestman coming in. Yes, coaching and schemes matter in this game. Justin Forsett caught like 40 passes last year in Kubiak's offense. Going to the Trestman offense, if you watch Chicago and what they did, they concentrated on key players. You know, your wide receivers, basically the top two, Marshall, Jeffrey, tight end, Bennett, and then Forte was, I mean, a god in fantasy football last year and the year before with all the catches, especially PPR. If you're playing PPR, just take a look at Justin Forsett. He already came out and bursted last year, and he was definitely not on the radar. But now he's a little bit on the radar. But I think even though he's going close to top 10, he'll likely outperform that, especially if you're playing PPR. He's going to have there's some people projecting him to have 70, 80 catches because of the offense they're going to be running. And if he stays healthy all year, who's really behind him? I mean, Bernard Pierce? What the heck did Bernard Pierce do with the starting job? Nothing. He's a clear-cut number one running back. He's going into a situation where Trestman likes to throw the football to his running back, and he likes to target the same guys. Go out there, get Forsett, and don't think twice about it. He will do good for your team. And anyways, that is the fantasy football running back preview. Hopefully you've learned something, or at least take some of the tips into your draft session next month. We'll be talking more fantasy football, a little bit more of draft strategy as we approach the end of the July and also into August. Just keep in mind, it's going to be a little murky, and we'll talk a little bit about what should you do early on, what should you do in the mid rounds, who are some late guys that could produce for you. It depends on your settings. It depends on what you're playing. There's a different strategy to PPR than there is to standard leagues. We'll navigate you through that. We'll talk a little bit about some top defenses to target and where you should take those defenses. I know I've spent a lot of time on fantasy football, but frankly, there's not much else to talk about. So with that being said, this is the part of the show where we basically say,
that's all I got.
Thank you, Mr. Producer, for getting that clip right. How could you not press the button at the right time? Oh, wait, I'm the producer. Oh, darn. Okay, so I'm going to give my thoughts on nothing, because that's all I got. I'm done. I'm tapped out. There's nothing to talk about, guys. Go enjoy your Sunday. Go have a beer. Go to the pool. It's summer. There's nothing to talk about. Congratulations to the U.S. Women's National Team winning the World Cup. You guys kicked some real great rear end against Japan. It was glorious to watch. It started right after we wrapped up the show last week. And it's funny, I went out and I went to do a beer run or something. And I was walking with CJ, actually, last week. I was like, we could miss the first 5 minutes. Nothing happens in the first 5 minutes of a soccer game. We get back 10 minutes later, we're up 2-0. Of course we are, because I decided to go do a beer run at the time. Anyways, that's all I got.
That's being a jackass.
That is being a jackass. If anyone's listening out there, great. If not, whatever. Enjoy your summer. We'll be back soon enough. We'll be talking about the hated, the despised, and the slightly less inflated balls of the New England Patriots next week. I think next week. I hope next week. We're shooting for next week. How about that? I can't commit to it now. Yeah, you know where to tune in. Same time, same place. Yeah, maybe not the same time. I don't know. I'm waffling a little bit here. Whatever. Anyways, make sure all of you tune in. Stay up to date with the latest news on NewYorkJetsFans.com. All of our sister, brother podcasts, like whatever they are, they're siblings of some kind. They're all out there on the site for you to check out. A lot of great content. We did have a Dennis Agapito sighting. I saw an article of his recently, so he is alive and kicking still, which is good to know. Tyson's posting out there a bunch of stuff. A lot of different Christian Dyer's out there. Go check it out. A lot of great content. And you guys enjoy your Sunday. We'll be right back.